The Electric Circus. Insert coin. Thank you. Press start.
That's right, The Electric Circus, the totally geek-tastic podcast devoted to news, reviews, rants, and raves on your favorite stuff, games, gear, cons, cosplay, and more. And here's the ringmasters for today's circus, Ray Gun and Uber Nerd 527. So let's go down to the center ring. The show's about to begin.
Walt Disney World is a tribute to the philosophy and the life of Walter Elias Disney, and to the talents, the dedication, and the loyalty of the entire Disney organization that made Walt Disney's dream come true. May Walt Disney World bring joy and inspiration and new knowledge to all who come to this happy place. A magic kingdom where the young at heart of all ages can laugh and play and learn together. Dedicated this 25th day of October, 1971.
Hey Arcaders, Ray Gun here with the Arcade Archives, and welcome to the 31st episode of the Electric Circus Podcast. We're really happy to have you on board today. As you could tell by the intro and the person doing the speech, something very big just happened the past week prior to this recording, and that would be the 50th anniversary of Walt Disney World. That makes a lot of us here on the site very, very happy. I don't think a lot of people know the fact that I think everybody who worked on the site either works on it now or worked on it in the past actually worked at Walt Disney World or still works for Walt Disney World. I literally started the website at the time that I started back at Disney. So I recruited literally everybody that I would run into at work and bring them in and let them do podcasts, do reviews, do articles of any shape and size. And that's what I think makes the site so rich and just so much fun is, you know, here's all these people, and we all have a common goal at work, and that's basically making magic for everybody that walks into the Walt Disney World Resort area. And we kind of take that experience plus everything our personal backgrounds, we bring it into the site, and I think that's what makes it really special. So on this 50th anniversary, I thought it'd be a lot of fun if we went through and kind of a round table setup that we go over our experiences working for Disney. The criteria being, one, the first time we ever went to a Disney park, whether it be Disneyland, Disney World. Number two, when we got hired at Disney World and where we started, because as most people know, you start somewhere and you move around, mostly is what you do. And our experiences as a whole, whether or not we're still with the company, what we liked, what we didn't like, bring it all together and come up with this very interesting conversation I thought we'd have today. So I figured we'd get things rolling with my dear friend Uber Nerd. So I am going to hand it off to him to get this whole thing rolling. Take it away, Uber Nerd.
Hey, Arcaders, this is Joshua with the Uber Nerd here, and I just wanted to share with you some of my Walt Disney World memories. And for me, Walt Disney World is just as comfortable as my own house, and not for the reasons you might expect. I grew up around the parks as my parents both worked there for years. As a child, I got to experience it in ways that very few children have, as I got to see both onstage and offstage sides of Walt Disney World. So when I was asked to share my favorite memories about the parks, I can't really choose. So instead, I chose to quickly remember my father, who became a Walt Disney Imagineer. My father was a Walt Disney Imagineer from 1993 to 2004. While many iconic rides, entire parks, and events went on during this time. Some of my favorite memories include going with my father backstage and seeing rides being built or tested. One example I can think of is when I was in middle school, my dad took me to go see a new project called Ellen's Energy Adventure at Epcot. Well, there, I got to see them working on some of the animatronics, including a few dinosaurs, one which I got to pet. I was so happy that I went to school the next day, telling my friends that I got to pet a dinosaur, while forgetting to mention that they were animatronic. There are many other fun memories I could mention, but my time is short, so I'm wrapping it up. Walt Disney World will always be a magical place to me in more ways than one. Now that I am a cast member myself and ended up meeting my wife there, this is a wonderful theme park that will always have a special place in my heart. Happy 50th anniversary, Walt Disney World.
Hello, Arcaders. This is Danny, the Ultrasonic Player here. And in celebration of the 50th anniversary of Walt Disney World, I'd like to share with you my own personal memories, both as a guest and as a cast member. So to start off with, my first memory was actually me going to Disney, specifically as a little kid, and I was still living in New York at the time, I believe. So though I have only a few vague memories of that, I do remember going into the actual park, and I think it was Magic Kingdom, or no, it wasn't Magic Kingdom. Rather, it was actually MGM Studios, or as it's known today, Hollywood Studios. So, but I do remember specifically waiting in the line to get in. And then after that, everything was kind of a blur, but just really taking in the whole thing, even at a very young age, like I believe five years old, I think, give or take. So even as vague as those memories were, it still stood out to me that going into Disney at the time, it was really unlike anything I had ever had before up to that point, just being able to go into a theme park, which to me felt like stepping into a whole new world. Pun intended. And of course, another memory that I remember specifically was Star Tours, though I had no idea what it was, and I knew next to nothing about Star Wars at the time. But that would change later on. So that was my first real memory on that one. But then, to add to that, it really wouldn't be until years later when me and my family had finally moved from New York to Florida. And we got a chance to go to one of the parks again. And this was right around the time when Aladdin, the movie, had come out, the original one. And it was all the rage, and rightfully so, because it was really that good of a movie, and it still is, even to this very day. But when we went in, I was able to do what I did before, which is really take in the whole theme park. But more than that, I was able to witness a parade, or motorcade, as it's nowadays called, of the whole Aladdin thing. And the one thing that always stood out to me, remembering seeing that motorcade, was the genie, you know, with his arms crossed and this big, really cool grin, you know, really wide, you know, ear-to-ear smile. Seeing that and Aladdin and Jasmine on top of, Abu as an elephant, it was just amazing. And then being able to go from there to seeing Indiana Jones, the stunt show, again, having only seen bits and pieces of The Last Crusade at the time, it was really something else, being able to see how the stunts were done. And my dad also got a kick out of it too. And then of course, from there, we went to Star Tours. And again, mind blown, and just really taking in this new world with all these characters in a galaxy far, far away, just incredible. But that, along with going into the Great Movie Ride and just witnessing all these really cool, moments from classic films, that is something that you really can't put a price tag on. And it is something that I'm glad to have been able to experience, because being able to travel to classic movies and running as either a cowboy or a mafia gangster, you can't put it in words. It's something that you really have to experience. Though I will be biased and say that I do prefer running into the mafia gangster, because they're just a lot cooler. But yeah, those things really, really just stood out to me. And then of course, fast forward many years later, being able to go to Disney, but this time as an employee or cast member, so to speak, and just being able to be a part of the of just the whole thing, and this time from the inside, was definitely something really special. And plus, it was my first ever job, so I really wanted to try and do just the best I possibly could. And I'm glad to have done so, because all these years later and many different locations later, I'm just glad to still be a part of it. But the big thing and the best thing about working at Disney, even to this very day, is the people. Specifically, my coworkers, my fellow cast members, and even the coordinators too. Because you're there, because the great thing about it, about them, is that no matter which location that I have worked at, and I've worked a few, the best thing about each of those places was that my coworkers were always willing to lend a hand, and I was able to do the same for them as well. And you know, when you're able to develop a rapport with other cast members and be able to help them just like they're helping you, and not only that, but to be able to have that consistently in each location that I've been fortunate enough to go to, it's probably one of the best gifts that I could ever have. And I'm glad that it's still that way to this very day. You know, I mean, even though, granted, yes, I've had different cast members come and go, but the best thing is being able to work with great people no matter which location that I've been at. Now, as for the other parts that are not so glamorous, I would say probably sometimes the scheduling. I mean, granted, for the most part, it's pretty good, but there's always moments where you kind of feel like, okay, I get it's back-to-back scheduling, but come on, I mean, I think some of us do need to rest a little bit, not to mention some of us kind of live a little bit far out of the way. And it would be nice, though, I mean, granted, I think if we all lived 5 or 10 or 15 minutes, you know, away from work, that would be pretty cool, but sadly, not all of us do. But even that's a minor thing. But really, I mean, that's probably the only real downside that I can think of sometimes with Disney. But even then, like I said, it's a minor thing, very, very, very tiny. Because the upsides of working at Disney have far outweighed the negative. From the coworkers, the coordinators, and even, before the COVID virus came along, you know, any cast member who was able to work within an X amount of time, we were able to then, you know, put on our regular, you know, clothes and be able to walk around the park. Unfortunately, we can't do that these days, you know, and actually check things out. It's very tricky to do. But still, back then, you know, it was really great. Plus, hey, cast member discounts on some items, movies, you know, again, who can argue with that? So yeah, I mean, those are pretty much probably that's pretty much the best way to describe my own memories being at Disney, even to this day. You know, it really is an incredible experience and an incredible place to work at. I mean, yeah, sure, it's not perfect, but then again, hey, which place is? But even with that, there's a lot of good parts to it that there's no reason why not to work for Disney if the opportunity does come. So again, I can't really think of much else other than, again, happy 50th anniversary, Walt Disney World, and here's to 50 more. Thank you.
All right, I guess it's my turn to tell you the story of how I got started at Disney. Mine begins way back in 1977. That was the first time I went to a Disney theme park. More importantly, I went to Disneyland. I went across country with my family in a van, very typical 70s thing. We had the van, it was a conversion van, so it had a little bed in it, and it had, you know, converted to a table and chairs, little kitchen area. And I think there was like 7 of us that went cross country from New York all the way across to California. I think the route we took, the first half of it, was all the way down to Texas, back up through Arizona, and into California. The plan was also to stop in, where were they from? They were just outside of Oakland. My dad had family lived there. His sister lived there and her family. So the plan was to go to them after we went to Disneyland and a few other things. So I remember the night before we went to Disneyland, we got into Anaheim, and I remember seeing a sign on the side of the road that said Disneyland next right. And we pulled immediately into this like Red Roof Inn directly next to the sign. So the entire night, I stared at that sign. I literally did not go to sleep. It's one of those moments you remember everything about it. Like, literally, the TV was on all night. The air conditioning unit was right next. It was like one of those wall mats next to the window. And I remember the cold air blowing on me. We're watching SWAT, if anybody remembers that show from the 70s. I remember SWAT being on. And then we're watching that, and I just kept staring out the window at that sign that was illuminated by the streetlights around it, Disneyland next right. And, you know, of course, we saw something on the right side as we were driving, you know, driving up, but you couldn't see anything. Like, you could see a giant sign down the road, but you couldn't see anything other than that. So, my 11-year-old mind was just overloaded, like, just by that sign being there. I could not. The next day was a blur. I remember getting in the park. I remember riding Small World, because their Small World is outside. The whole venue looks like our, I don't want to say mock interior, but when you get into the queue, it's kind of a, it is a mock interior that is actually the exterior of the Disneyland version, and it was just massive and crazy and kinetic, and it moved and it had sounds, and it did the on the hour it would tell the time, like with music and this and that, and it was just amazing. That is almost the only ride I remember. It was, like I said, everything about that. Oh, there was one other thing. We got ice creams towards the end of the night, and of course I saw this thing dipped in chocolate, and I wanted that, and it turned out to be a chocolate-coated banana. I hate bananas, so my dad made me eat every single morsel of that banana before we left that park. I had to sit in that spot and eat that whole thing. So yeah, that's what I remember of that. Also, that was the year Star Wars came out, so we actually saw Star Wars at Grauman's Chinese Theater. Sometime just after the premiere. I know it was like June-ish, somewhere around there. So I actually saw the original Star Wars in California, which was really cool, at the Chinese Theater. So then a few years goes by, and I don't really think about it after that. You know, great memories of the summer, this, that, and the other thing. But then the year after my dad passed, my mom decided to take us to Disney World. My family consisted of, you know, my mom, my stepdad, who I called my dad, but he was my stepfather, and he had five kids, I think, from the previous marriage. So every summer he got to do things with them. And I remember one summer they went to Walt Disney World, and I was so jealous because they went, we didn't. I didn't take offense to it at the time. I mean, I don't now either. It was his family, and, you know, we did our own thing, and it was fun. He had that one, like, two-week gap with them. You know, you as a kid, it's hard to understand, but then you kind of get the gist of it as you get older. And they came home, they were telling me stories about how Disney World was, and this place called Mystery Fun House, which was another place I truly loved growing up. It was a few years later, in 1981, we finally got the chance to go to Walt Disney World. So, we took the ride down, took about, I want to say it was 3-4 days. My mom would stop at various hotels. I remember one night we stayed at a Holiday Inn in Richmond, Virginia. And this is the old Holiday Inns that would have that giant neon sign that illuminated all, you know, the entire grounds of the property, because it was so big. And I remember swimming in the pool and going to play some arcade games in the arcade. I think it was the first place I ever saw Rally X. Then I remember the next night we got to go into south of the border, and that's where I saw Crazy Climber for the first time. And I remember going south of the border, and I was really excited. My mom didn't want to stop. Like, we stopped briefly, we had some lunch, we got to play some games. We wanted to stay at the hotel because back then that place was just wackadoo nuts crazy. I mean, it had all kinds of crazy stuff. It had its own little theme park and everything else. And my mom wanted to keep on plugging and get to Disney World. And I remember we stopped there. We had, I think, lunch, and then I remember playing Crazy Climber, this giant arcade they had. And then we stopped in South Carolina at a campground, and they had, you know, the store where you go up and buy, you know, your supplies for, you know, your stay. And they had an arcade there, and I remember that was the first place I ever saw Defender. And I remember playing the heck out of that. And then we got to Disney World, and we didn't stay on property because at the time all you had was Contemporary, Polynesian, Fort Wilderness. That was it. There was no anything but Magic Kingdom and those resorts. So we stayed at a, which doesn't exist anymore, by the way, because I looked it up. Obviously, you would know if it was still there. A Yogi Bear campground. And I remember loving that place. Like, we were there for, I think, 4 or 5 days. And they had a Y-shaped pool, a beautiful arcade. They had all kinds of just really fun stuff to do. And it was on, if you're familiar with the Central Florida area, it was on Turkey Lake Road, which now that area, I don't even know what it is now, but I remember after finding out its location, it was completely empty. There was nothing there. It had been torn down years before. This was like the mid-90s when I started looking up after I'd moved here. And it was just a lot of fun. And I remember going to the park and just having an absolute blast and going on every single attraction there. You know, I was a big fan of the Haunted Mansion because I had model sets from when I was a kid. And Pirates of the Caribbean, same thing. I had these model sets. I don't even remember the name of the company. I'll think about it later on. But they had these do-it-yourself model kits you put together, and they had like a motion action thing, and you know, they had some with Haunted Mansion, they had some with the Pirates of the Caribbean. I remember getting a few of them, and so I was a huge fan of both rides. And I think at least the Pirates of the Caribbean one, I think a few of the figures were based on the Florida attraction. And just being in awe of seeing these attractions that in my head I had seen for years. You know, like, I remember when Disney first opened, I had a little comic book, and I had to have been about 5 or 6. And the little comic book described Haunted Mansion, and Br'er Rabbit was scared to go on it, and this and that. And it already fascinated me from that moment, and I had to go on it, and it didn't disappoint me. I don't remember going on the one in California, but I do definitely remember going on the one in Florida. So, you know, the vacation comes to an end, we drive home, and the first thing I did when I got home was I wrote a letter to Walt Disney World saying that I really, really wanted to work for the company. This is September 81. And I don't think, but it was a few weeks later, I got this giant manila, it wasn't even a manila envelope, it was a white envelope. It had Walt Disney World on it. I was so just super psyched. It had all kinds of cast member information in it. It had maps. It had a preview thing of Epcot. It had all kinds of stuff. I still have it somewhere buried in my personal belongings, but that was that moment that I knew I wanted to work here at Disney. You know, and then of course I get into repairing video games, and the first thing in my head was, hey, I want to repair video games at Walt Disney World. That's all I wanted at the time. Literally all I could think about was building my knowledge, getting to Disney, working for them, and working in the arcade. All I wanted to do. Years and years and years go by. I was almost in the college program, but I was bumped at the last minute because we had an exchange student from Sweden. And of course, that was the year the Norway Pavilion opened at Epcot. So they pulled this girl. She was either Norwegian or Swedish. I don't remember. But they pulled her, and they had to relinquish some people because of other people they were pulling for Epcot, and I was one of the ones that didn't get to go. And that was 1988 when I was in college. So I was really disappointed. But then it turned out, which I didn't know at the time, that about a year later, I would formulate the plan of moving to Florida. I moved to Florida. I lived in Tampa for a while, and then I came over here to Orlando, and I didn't work for Disney at first. I had various jobs, one of which is where I met my wife at Dollar Rent-A-Car at the airport. We were, I think, about a month into our marriage. I had gone on an interview for a caricature artist. What a lot of people don't know is I used to draw pretty well. I mean, I wasn't like the best, but I could draw. So I said, well, you know, I'll pick up this job, caricature artist. I could make some money. And the interview went great. He was going to get back to me. And this was back in the time when you had to be fully dressed in a suit to go to Disney for anything. You were applying for a job. You had to be dressed up. There was just no way around it. So I got done with the interview, and it was at what we used to call the Marketplace, the Disney Marketplace, but now it's Disney Springs. It's not Downtown Disney anymore, Ray, but it was the Marketplace. And, of course, I was right across the street in casting, so I was thinking, well, you know, I'm already dressed up, and I might as well go over and give it a shot. I'd always wanted to. So I walked in, and you had to fill out your application, and you sat in this one giant room, and every 10 or 15 minutes you'd have to watch what was called the Bob video. So you'd go in this room, and there was a cast member named Bob, and he'd go over what the advantages of being a cast member were for Disney, and you watch that. Then you would go out and wait for your name to be called, and then you would see a recruiter, and then you'd hope to get a job. Well, I had this one guy. I want to say his name was Reggie. For some reason, I think his name was Reggie. This was 1995, so it's a few years ago. And then had the interview. Felt like I knocked it out of the park. He says, okay, I really want to see if I can find you somewhere. Let me get back to you. Here's my card. I'm like, wow, this guy actually gave me his card. So, you know, and this was at a time my wife and I had one car. We didn't have very much money. At the time, we were waiting for an apartment. We were living with a friend. And I called that number every day for a week. Solid. Sometimes it could have been twice a day, three times a day. Leave voicemails. Did whatever I had to. And then finally, I called him. And now, we didn't have a phone. And back then, you didn't have cell phones. I was on a payphone. So I was, you know, carrying my change around on plopping in the payphone and calling and calling and calling. And finally, Reggie's on the phone with me. And he says, all right, I got something for you. If you want it, it's at Epcot for Journey to Imagination and Honey, I Shrunk the Audience. I'm like, yes, I'll do it. And my start date was, I think, the 25th of October, I want to say, somewhere around there, of 1995. And that was such a remarkable time because our oldest daughter, Caitlin, was just about to be born. She was due, I think, in February, March, somewhere around there. She came in January. And subsequently, just after I applied, my wife applied for Disney and ended up getting a job in the travel company, which is where she is today. And I remember training for this job. First, I trained at Honey, I Shrunk the Audience because you had a spiel to learn. You did spiel in front of a group of 750 people because the theater could hold 750 people. And back then, that was like the number one attraction at Epcot at the time. So like our lines on holidays would back right out to the entrance and people would wait in it. And I remember doing the spiel, you know, having a background in broadcasting and television. I was nervous, but I knew that I could do it, you know, so I did it, had a great time. We could somewhat improv as long as it didn't go overboard. So it was a lot of fun. Fun fact, I still have like my badge from the Imagination Institute that I It's one of my prized possessions that management made for all the cast members who worked at Honey, I Shrunk the Audience. So that was pretty cool. And then I worked on Journey to Imagination as well, so then I was trained over there. And what a beautiful... There aren't words to describe how beautiful this ride truly was until you actually see it. And I don't mean on a YouTube video with grainy video. I mean, like, to see it in real time. It was amazing. There was, like I said, literally no words to describe it. It was just a beautiful ride. I used to love working on that ride. I remember vividly, and I just brought this up on a Facebook group that I'm part of, Friends of Figment. I remember when I used to close, because they knew my wife was a cast member, they would let me close most nights upstairs in the Imageworks. Now, in the old days, you had the ride, and then the upstairs portion was the interactive play area, whereas today it's actually, they've cut out a section of the ride, and the Imageworks actually is downstairs, and it's to me, I mean, it's nice, but it's very lackluster compared to what we had upstairs on that second floor. Now, I remember going upstairs and, you know, closing the area, and I had to stay up there until they called that the building's closed, and then we could go outside and stand in our positions waiting for the groups of people to come down and leave the park, because we would close at 7. The park would close at 9, so Future World was already closed. That was to get everybody out to World Showcase to see the fireworks, and then we'd get them out. So I would close that, and I would go back out to my spot in direct traffic. And I remember my wife would come in from work, because we had one car, and she would pick our daughter up from her nanny, and she would pull into the main parking lot, and she would walk in with the stroller. And I remember standing upstairs in this giant glass pyramid, and I would stare down waiting for my wife to, when I would see her come up the walkway. And we'd come upstairs, and Caitlin got to play, my oldest daughter, Caitlin, got to play upstairs for quite some time. She would go up there, and I'd go out and do my thing, and then I'd meet up with them when I was done to go home. And it was just an amazing time. And then later on, my daughter Zoe got to do the same thing. So it was really cool, my youngest daughter. Got to do the same thing there, where, you know, I would close, and, you know, they got to play. So they're my entire family is kind of a part of the original Journey to Imagination, and it was a really good time in my life, and I really enjoyed it. But then something happened. We realized we're not making enough money to have our apartment. We wanted a house, this, that, and other, you know, everything kind of builds up. So my wife and I, we both decide to leave Disney and pursue jobs out in the real world so we could make some more money. I mean, you have to understand that back then, you know, starting pay for a attractions cast member, I think I was making $6.50 an hour. I mean, it was crazy back then, but that's what you made. You know, so I left and I pursued my job as an arcade technician, and had lots of jobs in the industry, and you know, we did okay. My wife moved on to a telecom company and did her thing. And, you know, years go by, and, you know, I end up having to go back to Disney. And my first experience back at Disney, I was working Magic Kingdom. I was doing parade audience control. Now, these are the people that you see that basically stand on the side of the road making sure that nobody walks out in front of the parade, making sure that people don't go over certain lines on the ground, because those are walkways for characters and performers and things like that. I did that for a while. I also worked as a conductor on the steam train going around Magic Kingdom. I also was an engineer for a short while on the steam train going around Magic Kingdom. I was in the process of being trained, and because I was part-time, I trained and never got to the final inspection process because I was part-time and they needed me downstairs, because I also worked at the main gate doing admissions. So I would go down there and do that as well. So I did a lot of things there. Well, then, you know, a lot of people said, well, if you want to advance, you got to move out of the, you know, where you are. And I was also part-time, so, you know, I needed to move on. So then I got this job at Disney Quest, and that was amazing, because that's when everything kind of fell into place for the archives. I had started the Arcade Archives shortly before I started working for Disney in 2011. Well, then when I got to Disney Quest in 2013, that's when I met Josh, I met Danny, I met literally everybody that worked on the website in one form or another at Disney, that literally all of us have worked at Disney. And that's when things really started, you know, on the upswing. And, you know, I got Josh on board, I got Danny on board, I had Heather on board, Raven Heather. I had, you know, the list that you see on the website, those people are still, you know, active. They don't do any articles right now, but they're active people that have worked on this site, and they all worked with me at Disney one form or another. So I always thought that was really cool. Then that turned into the job that I have now, which is with a company that services the arcade games on property. So everything comes for full circle. I wanted that job. I got that job. It took me years to get there, but that's what I do. And then, you know, during the pandemic, of course, you know, I had to take another job, but I truly missed my work with the company I work with, JFH Technologies, on property. We do all the arcade repair, pinball machines, video games. I know we got into the pool pool vacuums and all kinds of other stuff, but I work for that company, and I'm proud to say that I've been with them now for almost, with the exception of the year that I was off, 9 years I've been with them, and it's been an amazing time. It's everything that I wanted out of being on property working on video games. That's what I do. I worked on the games at Disney Quest. I got all the classic arcade games working, and you know, there wasn't many people that could work on a CRT monitor at the time, and everything had been computer-based for a few years and flat screens and things like that. So, you know, that was like the huge advantage, was being able to work on that stuff. And, you know, sadly, a lot of those games had been sold off since the closure. And we have a few left on property that I maintain from time to time. And that is ultimately my story of what it's been like working for Disney, and my history with Disney from the very beginning. I think that everybody's had their say. I think, you know, I think it's time we should end it right here. This has been an amazing podcast. I'm very, very honored and proud to be a part of what I do for Disney. The fact that they've been here for 50 years, it blows my mind, because I was there during the 25th and the 40th. So, you know, I've been around a little while. I haven't been around, like, a lot of the people are celebrating their 50th anniversary with the company. That's amazing. I want to thank everybody. Josh, Danny, and everybody else who's worked on the site. Thank you for the amazing 10 years you've given me, and the friendships. And I thank that all to Disney, literally. Because if it wasn't for Disney, I wouldn't have any of what I have right now. And, you know, the memories I have with my family at Disney are just things that will never, you know, fade away in my mind, because they're a part of our history. And that's what's really cool about Disney as a whole is, you know, a lot of us that work here, it's part of our history. It's part of our life, like anything else. And so, you know, happy anniversary, Walt Disney World. Thank you very much for everything that, you know, I've been able to do on property. And I hope that I've made guests happy with the things I do. And I know that's exactly how everybody else feels. So we're going to end it here. I want to thank each and every one of you. Again, thank you for listening to us and supporting us. And please visit our Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, like, subscribe. A lot of big things coming. And as usual, I want to thank each and every one of you. Keep playing like it's 1981. And I'll talk to you on the next Electric Circus. Bye, everybody.
Hey, Arcaders. This is Ray Gunn from the Arcade Archives Network. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast that you're listening to. If you're listening on iTunes, please give it 5 stars. A lot of time and patience go into every podcast we do. 5-star ratings help us so we can continue giving you this quality entertainment every month. And don't forget to share us with your friends. If you're listening to us on YouTube, please give us a like and subscribe to our channel. And if you're over on our Facebook page, please like and share. Once again, we do this for you guys, and we enjoy doing it every single month. So every little bit helps. So please go online and like us today. Thanks. Keep playing like it's 1981, and I'll talk to you guys later. Bye now.
The Electric Circus is a part of the Arcade Archives Network and is produced by What's This Button Do Productions. Hey guys, what's this button do?
That's what the button does.
The Electric Circus is a part of the Arcade Archives Network.
With assistance from...
Rebellion Productions.